all their weight. When I probe a bit, I usually discover that they haven't been on the program their whole lives. They've been on and off, and their weight has gone down and up accordingly. I understand the draw of programs that promise weight loss, especially ones that offer group support for their members. I believe it is the support of the community that keeps people going back. Their primary problem, however, is that the behaviors they teach, like counting points or calories and avoiding certain food groups, don't sustain long-term weight stability for the majority of their customers. That means they set people up to fail. Focusing on the number on the scale as the ultimate measure of success leads many to quit if they don't lose weight fast enough, or if their bodies won't let them reach an unrealistic goal for their heredity or age. Unfortunately, any positive changes are lost in the process. Kim Howell, Body Positive Leadership Training Participant. Every opinion based on scientific criticism, I welcome. As to the prejudices of so-called public opinion, to which I have never made concessions, now as aforetime the maxim of the great Florentine is mine. Segue il tuo corso e lascia dir le genti. Follow your own road and let the people talk. Karl Marx. This quotation is one of my most beloved. Not only does quoting Karl Marx tend to raise eyebrows, but the notion of following one's own road without concessions or consideration of public opinion can also be viewed as rather unconventional. But that's me. Unconventional. Growing up in a Midwestern, upper-middle-class neighborhood, a more keen focus was placed on my race than my weight. I spent a great deal of time feeling different because of the color of my skin, but not the size of my body. Fast forward a couple of decades, I moved from Ohio to Southern California. I was tossed into a world of people from a host of countries, a multitude of textures, races, and ethnicities. No sooner had I begun to feel at home with my race than something else reared its ugly head. The impression that my weight and size now made me unconventional, and not in a good way. I was surrounded by people who engaged in procedures to change parts of their bodies I had no idea could be manipulated. And these were people I loved and admired. I was in a community of people I found stunningly beautiful, who spent hours on end picking apart their every perceived flaw. I too began to see my flaws, and I fell into a downward spiral of disordered eating and living. I was miserable. During this time, I was seeing a psychiatrist who said to me, "Your problem is that you do have an eating disorder, but you also have a high body mass index, so you're going to need to lose weight. I suggest you do it in a safe, healthy environment." So I joined Weight Watchers with my sister, and soon we both became obsessed scale junkies, doomed to find our worthiness in a number. Ironically, during this process, I decided to use my disordered eating as the driving force behind my doctoral dissertation, which led me to my first body positive workshop in October 2011. It changed my life. I showed up with my little brown bag of breakfast and lunch items with an awareness of each and every precious Weight Watcher point encased within. But then something happened. I found myself surrounded by young people seeking more knowledge of how to spread the word of self-love and acceptance across their high school and college campuses. And I was moved. These exquisite people were all shapes, sizes, ages, genders, and nationalities. A pure amalgamation of beauty. I could not shake how wonderful it felt to be accepted just as I was in the present moment. During that magical weekend, I embarked upon a new relationship with food as well as my body. I learned to listen to my body. I learned to respect food. I discovered that my body knows what and how much I need if I merely stop, breathe, and allow it its much-deserved respect and adoration. I called my sister from the workshop and said, "Well, it's a long story, but not only am I not going back to Weight Watchers, I'd love it if you could get rid of my scale before I get home, because I'm never stepping on it again." My sister and I now engage in intuitive eating practices and encourage one another to love ourselves just as we are. I am making strides with my own body story and continue to empower others to love themselves and each other. The world would be such a boring place if everyone looked the same. So I now work to help others see how glorious our communities are with the diversity of human shapes and sizes.
Segue il tuo corso e lascia dire le genti.
Follow your own road and let the people talk. The simplistic and misleading body mass index. What I've learned the hard way is that the BMI tells you nothing about a patient's health. Tony Martin, MD. Body Mass Index, BMI, a well-known and widely used measure of health, divides individuals into categories of underweight, optimal weight, overweight, and obese, based simply upon a rather meaningless calculation of a height-to-weight ratio. Why do I say meaningless? Let's examine the creation of the BMI and how it came to be used as a measure of health, as shared by author J. Eric Oliver in his book Fat Politics, and summarized later. Belgian astronomer Adolf Quetelet invented the BMI calculation in the 1830s because he was interested in observing norms in human beings as determined by the bell curve. The measurement had nothing to do with body fat, mortality, or disease, and more to do with the mathematical laws of probability. In the 1940s, the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company adopted the BMI measurements to determine how much to charge their customers for insurance. Without any scientifically determined evidence showing a causal link between weight and health, they came up with ideal weight charts. Soon after, thanks to forceful lobbying by one of the Metropolitan Life statisticians, this misleading measurement was adopted by doctors, epidemiologists, and the U.S. government as a way to determine the health of the American population. The history of the BMI reveals that it is actually a poor indicator of anyone's health. The fact that it does not account or control for variables such as gender, age, race, and cultural background also supports this revelation. Furthermore, the BMI does not distinguish between weight originating from fat tissue versus weight originating from muscle tissue. It is simply a measure of how much an individual's body type varies from the weight-height ratio norm found in human beings. To make matters worse, a panel of specialists brought together in 1998 by the National Health, Lung, and Blood Institute lowered the BMI numbers for all weight categories. Overnight, people who were once considered to be in the optimal weight range became overweight, and those who were overweight became obese. Studies done in recent years show that much of the hype over the obesity epidemic has been based on false information. In fact, researchers at the Centers for Disease Control found that people categorized as slightly overweight per their BMI have lower mortality rates than people in other categories, including the optimal weight category. These findings support the body positive's preference to define health without including BMI. A war against fat has been declared, and it's harmful. If diets really worked, we'd be running out of dieters. Glenn Gasser, PhD, author of Big Fat Lies, The Truth About Your Weight and Your Health. The United States and many other countries have declared a war on fat. Former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop created his program, Shape Up America, as a great crusade to combat obesity. It is worth noting that funding for Shape Up America came from Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, and SlimFast, among others. A subsequent U.S. Surgeon General, Richard Carmona, went so far as to label obesity as a terror within, stating that it is every bit as threatening to us as is the terrorist threat we face today. While many public health programs emphasize healthy eating and exercise habits, they also frighten people by using obesity prevention language, which generally leads to short-term changes in weight and lifestyle only. What's more, there is growing concern among medical and mental health practitioners that these war on obesity messages are causing preoccupation with food, weight loss, weight gain cycling, eating disorders, weight stigmatization, and other physical and mental health issues. Sizeism, a consequence of the war against fat. That one size we are hoping to reach, the size at which we will be safe from abandonment, rejection, and disintegration, is only an illusion. That size can never be reached, and if we constantly strive to obtain it, it will never be found. Protection from suffering does not come from a number on a scale, a size in one's clothing, or an approving look from another. Freedom can only be found when you hear your voice and have the courage to follow it. Alyssa B., Body Positive Leader. The hysteria related to health and weight promotes fear and shame for people of all sizes. No one wants to experience the discrimination and harassment fat people encounter on a daily basis. Sizeism, or weightism as it is sometimes labeled, has developed into a socially acceptable form of oppression. The prevalence of discrimination based on body size is now close to the prevalence of gender or race bias, and in some situations even higher. Studies show that health professionals, even those who are obesity specialists, treat their larger patients with less sensitivity, patience, and respect than smaller individuals. Numerous people have had health services or insurance denied to them because of their size. Additionally, women, people of color, and those living at lower socioeconomic levels are statistically more likely to be fat, linking size discrimination to social bigotry and other inequities. On the other hand, people who are exceptionally thin also face teasing and discrimination, the assumption being that such a low weight could only be the result of an eating disorder. The media attack Hollywood stars for putting on weight, but when those same celebrities respond by taking it off, they are once again a cover story. As the voyeuristic audience, we are supposed to be appalled by their weight gain and then horrified if they develop an eating disorder. The line between fat and thin is a fickle one. I once had an encounter on an airplane that offers a reminder of what can be gained when we see people as whole human beings and what is lost if we succumb to prejudice. I was flying home from San Diego, where I had been working at a high school with a group of body positive leaders. The students had conducted a week-long body image event on campus that culminated with an extremely powerful play created by their theater department. I was so emotionally high on the flight home that I could have fueled the airplane with my energy alone. Being the last person to board, only middle seats were available. I plopped my bag down on a seat near the rear of the plane and went to the bathroom. On my way out of the stall, a flight attendant approached me and said, "I'm so sorry you have to sit next to that man. We'll see what we can do to help you out." I was immediately offended by his disparaging words because I knew he was talking about my seatmate who happened to be fat. "Excuse me?" I asked. "I don't understand what you're talking about." I knew exactly what he meant, but wanted to hear what would come next. "We'll send someone back here to give you a partial refund of your ticket, since you're being inconvenienced by sitting next to him," said the flight attendant, glancing up the aisle. I put my hands on my hips, said in a loud and indignant voice, "I'm fine, thank you very much," and walked away. Throughout this interaction, my seatmate had been standing up awaiting my return. It was evident he had overheard the whole exchange. As soon as I sat down, I told him with enthusiasm about my experience watching the play. I explained the body positive's work, including our position on weight and health. The flight ended up being the most interesting I've ever had. This man was extremely calm and thoughtful, especially compared to my jazzed-up state. While I talked a mile a minute, he interjected simple yet profound statements that I could feel were expanding my understanding of what I was experiencing in my life and work at that particular time. He told me he had been a sound healer for many years and explained the way he used different instruments to physically and emotionally cure people. As he spoke, I could hear in my head and feel throughout my body the sound he would choose to help me become more centered and grounded. It's hard to explain, but I could literally feel his healing of me happening right then and there, without even having an instrument involved. We didn't speak about what he was thinking or what was going on for me, but something definitely happened on an energetic level, and I was left with a deep sense of faith in myself. Throughout the previous year, I had been struggling with this very issue. How to trust my intuition to know what was required for the growth of the body positive. In the months that followed that flight home from San Diego, my voice became strong and I was able to clearly articulate what I truly felt was needed. I attribute this action directly to the clarity I gained from my short time with the beautiful man on the airplane. Had I only seen him as taking up space, I never would have received the profound wisdom he offered me with his straightforward words and gifts as a sound healer. Bariatric surgery, a dangerous cure for obesity. Many people are now attempting weight loss through bariatric surgery, a procedure that restricts the amount of food that can be eaten and digested. This course of action is purported to be a cure for obesity, but it is important to understand the risks involved. In Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight, author Linda Bacon, PhD, lists myriad complications, including, to name just a few, dumping, abdominal cramps, bloating, palpitations, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and shortness of breath, bowel/fecal impaction, irregular body fat distribution, lumpy body, suicidal thoughts, weight regain, and risk for the development of anorexia or bulimia. Dr. Bacon cites studies showing that up to 15% of these patients die over a 7 to 9 year post-surgery period. For older adults, the death rate within the first year after surgery has been shown to be up to 50%. How disturbing that these procedures continue to be promoted in the name of health improvement, even with the associated complications and high mortality rate. Elizabeth, when is bariatric surgery a success? I am troubled by the idea of bariatric surgery as a cure for obesity, because it reminds me of an upsetting encounter I once had with a woman at a conference. I was teaching the group about the Be Body Positive model, and as I talked about dieting, weight cycling, and bariatric surgeries, I mentioned how sad I feel that people are constantly fighting their natural body size, willing to endure so much suffering in their efforts to become thin. At the end of my lecture, a woman came up to me and told me she had been through a successful bariatric surgery because she had lost a substantial amount of weight. She felt so good about herself that she signed papers to allow her 14-year-old daughter to receive the same procedure. This girl had the surgery, lost weight, and died 6 months later. The mother was profoundly distressed and deeply damaged by her participation in allowing the operation to be done on her young daughter. These surgeries can kill people who would not have died otherwise. People who could have lived healthy, peaceful lives in fat bodies. In order to undergo bariatric surgery, or allow a child to do so, one has to believe that thinness is worth dying for. I see this in clients with eating disorders and fight it every day in my therapy practice. I'm constantly overwhelmed by sadness and grief for these precious individuals who are harming themselves in a multitude of ways because of their problematic relationships with their bodies. I'm furious with a society that promotes and glamorizes the behaviors that are killing them. The cost is extremely high. Ethical considerations. One highly alarming aspect of our society's devotion to dieting is the unethical relationship between the diet industry and medical research. As Pat Lyons, RN, MA, reveals in her chapter Prescription for Harm in the Fat Studies Reader, strategies for obesity research, treatment, and prevention are being driven by the profits of the weight loss industry. The same obesity experts who make huge profits running weight loss clinics also serve as faculty of medical institutions and National Institutes of Health, NIH, panelists that define public health priorities. As Ms. Lyons points out, these supposedly unbiased experts obtain millions of dollars in NIH research grants and review research papers for publication in medical journals, while simultaneously maintaining relationships as paid consultants and board members of weight loss and pharmaceutical companies. In contrast to the amount of money being spent to cure obesity, relatively little is being done to treat the rapidly escalating number of people suffering from severely poor body image, yo-yo dieting, and dangerous eating disorders that have stemmed from the nation's hysteria surrounding weight. The number of people hospitalized for eating disorders has risen dramatically since 1999, as have the costs. Individuals and families pay an average of $30,000 per month for inpatient or residential treatment with little help from their insurance companies. Inpatient care generally lasts from 3 to 6 months. We think it is cruel and unethical to promote or prescribe weight loss through restrictive dieting, pills, or surgery. This is especially true when considering the scientific evidence proving these interventions are rarely effective long-term, and quite often unsafe or even lethal. Jessica Diaz, the Body Positive board member. I once went to my HMO for an appointment about a rash I had on my arm. The nurse who was seeing me that day came in, checked me up and down, and launched into a physical activity assessment. I mentioned that I take dance classes and swim several times per week. She looked at me from above her glasses and said, "I'm sure you know you should lose weight." I held her stare and replied, "I'm not here to talk about my weight." She ignored me and said, "Well, I am instructed to talk about weight loss with people who have high blood pressure." I asked, "Can you please check my chart to see if I have high blood pressure?" She looked through my chart and grimaced. "Do I have high blood pressure?" I repeated. She replied, "No, you are perfectly healthy." "Great," I said. "Now let's talk about why I'm here." Health, body positive style. Re-examine all you have been told in school or church or in any book, and dismiss whatever insults your own soul, and your very flesh shall be a great poem, and have the richest fluency, not only in words, but in the silent lines of its lips and face, and between the lashes of your eyes, and in every motion and joint of your body. Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass. We take a giant step towards giving our bodies what they need to thrive when we move away from the belief that health comes in a certain size, or that it is a state of perfection that can be attained and sustained by attempts to rigidly control our eating and exercise. Viewing health from a whole person perspective allows us to create a lifestyle that meets our needs on all levels: physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Being healthy in a body positive terminology means inhabiting your body fully. Life circumstances, e.g., injuries, illnesses, disabilities, time constraints, and levels of access to nutritious foods and safe places to exercise, may affect your capacity to maintain consistent self-care. All that is required is to do the best you can, taking into consideration your situation in the moment. Delight in all the things your body can do, and take pleasure in using it whenever possible. Use pain and discomfort as signals that adjustments may be needed, and take action to make the changes that are within your power. Thank your body when it is working well, and give it love and forgiveness when it is not. The body positive definition of health expands beyond the physical to include care for emotional and spiritual needs as well. Reach for kindness and compassion when you are faced with difficult life experiences, and use moments of struggle as opportunities for growth rather than punishment. Self-love is the ultimate source for making life easier. It leads to better self-care on all levels. In body positive workshops, we gather participants together in small groups to discuss what health means to them and how to define it in ways they can easily communicate to others. Here is a definition from one of these groups that summarizes what we hear most often. Health is a holistic view of a person's life, more than just physical wellness. Being able to cope with emotions and life experiences in a positive way whenever possible. Seeking balance in all areas of life, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. Making decisions determined by one's own motivation for doing things, e.g., moving to feel good rather than to lose weight as one might be told to do by a fitness program. Being sensible, for the most part. Keeping an open mind. Not obsessing over food and weight. Having prospering relationships. Being comfortable in one's skin. Living life in a purposeful, beneficial manner. Become your own health expert. When we rely on authorities to tell us what we need, we have little ability to filter these messages and pressures. If we become our own authorities, we can learn what's right for us. We can take in information and say, no, this isn't for me, or maybe, yes, this feels right. With this ability, we find our balance. What's so beautifully simple is that we each possess this wisdom already. It's not something we must struggle to learn, but rather a process of peeling back the layers to see how we may have lost it in order to find it again. Sammy Joe R., Body Positive Leader. To become your own expert, it is critical to examine the messages you've received and continue to receive throughout your life about health, weight, food, and exercise. Also beauty, but we'll get to that in a later chapter. You'll want to pay attention not only to what you've been told by the media and medical professionals, but also by your family, friends, and culture. Once you clearly identify the messages, you can begin to think critically about which ones work for you. If particular information is intriguing, try it out to see how it makes you feel. If you adopt a behavior that leads to better physical and/or mental health, and most importantly, it is something you can sustain over the long term, keep it in your toolkit. From this same observant position, you can also identify the messages that trigger guilt or shame. If the information doesn't make you feel better, or is a behavior you can't maintain over time, discard it and return to what you know to be right for you. I want to be clear that I am not telling you to ignore what your doctor or other health practitioners tell you. For example, if a physician says your blood pressure or cholesterol level is high, you'll want to pay attention and take action. If you are instructed to take medication for either of these conditions, or others, you will want to listen to your intuition to see if that feels like the right course of action. What you don't want to do is follow the advice of an expert blindly, especially if they tell you it's imperative that you lose weight to improve your health and suggest going on a diet. Perhaps your condition will improve by increasing physical activity or making dietary and other life changes. Or you may feel it's right to take the medication. It is up to you to listen to the signals from within to help with these kinds of decisions. Let me repeat, even with information from experts, it is vitally important to conduct a personal experiment to find out if specific advice is appropriate for you. Health messages come and go. Your body will know what works best for you. Your job is to listen and respond accordingly. Over time, as you get more closely in touch with your intuitive wisdom, you'll be able to more easily discern how best to care for your unique body. The following story illustrates how my experimentation process lets me be my own expert and care for myself in the best way possible. Kale. One day it seemed that everywhere I went, people were raving about the health benefits of kale. Though I'd always loved leafy greens, kale wasn't one I sought out. People told me how much they liked sautéed kale, kale chips, and other kale recipes, so I thought I'd give it a shot. But, try as I might, I couldn't make myself like it. Cooked? Yuck. Raw? Scary. I continued to purchase big bunches of the beautiful green vegetable, even though guilt consumed me each time I dumped it, wilted and rotting, into my compost bin. Finally, I accepted the fact that I didn't like kale and stopped pretending I would make myself eat it, even if experts said it would enhance my health. When a new friend gave me a salad recipe that sounded intriguing, I decided to give it one more chance. The recipe was fun to create. The dressing and other ingredients were massaged into the kale by hand. And the final product was aesthetically pleasing, filling my big bamboo bowl with vibrant color and a perfect combination of flavors and textures. Suddenly, I craved kale salad. I added it to my eggs in the morning and ate it as a side or main dish for lunch and dinner. I made the salad for all of my friends and talked about it like it was a new lover. When purchasing kale in the market, people would make comments about how good I was being and that they knew they should eat it. I, of course, had to tell my story about how much I actually hated this particular vegetable until I discovered the salad, which led to people pulling out scraps of paper and shopping lists to quickly scribble the recipe down before I left the store. After several weeks of eating the kale salad regularly, I noticed my digestive system was hyperactive and that I was spending an inordinate amount of time in the bathroom. It quickly became obvious that kale was something my body only needed in small amounts. Though I had heard eating it in abundance was good for me, obviously, for my body, it wasn't. As you can determine from this story, it was more important for me to listen to my body than to outside recommendations about the health benefits of eating large quantities of kale. I learned new information, conducted my own personal experiment to test it out, and honored the results by adjusting the amount of kale I consumed. We become experts when we are willing to conduct experiments like these and respond to the information we gather. If your eating and exercise habits seem appropriate for your lifestyle and you are happy with the state of your health, continue with what feels right. If you want to make changes in your self-care routine and are intrigued by what you hear, pay close attention to how your body responds as you carry out your research. Over time, you build trust in your ability to recognize your unique requirements for food, movement, rest, pleasure, and social support, allowing you to live as healthfully as possible, given your genetics and current life circumstances. True pleasure leads to healthy choices. Good health is much closer to home, much simpler, and more enjoyable than we imagined. It derives from a pursuit of healthy pleasures. In short, the healthiest people seem to be pleasure-loving, pleasure-seeking, pleasure-creating individuals. Robert Ornstein, Ph.D., David Sobel, M.D., Healthy Pleasures. I am incredibly sad that pleasure has gotten a bad rap in the health world. Approaching health as a moral duty can cause people to fail in achieving their physical goals because the process becomes a chore with unreasonably high expectations. Think about how many people's primary New Year's resolution is to lose weight by dieting and exercising every day. As we know, these newly adopted relationships with food and exercise often slip away quickly because the motivation behind them is about weight loss and being good, rather than making lifestyle changes that are fun and sustainable. When we focus on pleasurable self-care, we have a much better chance of maintaining good health. As Sobel and Ornstein discuss in their book, Healthy Pleasures, it is in our genetic coding to engage in pleasurable behaviors because this gave us a greater chance of survival as we evolved as a species. The enjoyable activities and flavors pursued by our early ancestors were the ones that kept them alive. One of the problems people have with the concept of pleasure is its association with excess and being bad, which is how they describe the experience of breaking dieting rules, letting go of control, giving in to vices, etc. As in, I was bad yesterday because I ate a pint of ice cream. When I was bulimic, I thought binging gave me pleasure, because during the time I let myself eat whatever I wanted in large quantities, I was free from my restrictive diet. It was my rebellion against the part of me that was rigid and afraid. I wanted to be bad, to thwart my jailkeeper's plans to keep me contained. I admit, the first few bites of a binge gave me great pleasure because of the freedom I felt. But eating far beyond physical fullness only brought pain and suffering. The after effect resembled nothing even close to freedom. I felt utterly trapped in my obsession. When I learned, over time and with much practice, that it was extraordinarily pleasurable to savor the food I chose to eat and to stop when I felt physically satisfied, I no longer needed to eat to the point of feeling sick and disgusted with myself. I was able to experience this new way of eating only when I gave myself permission to have and enjoy any foods I wanted at any time. You may or may not be familiar with the mantra of most dieters. Tomorrow I'll begin my diet. This is the last time I'll eat this food, so I'll eat as much of it as possible right now, since I'll never have it again. Tomorrow I'll be good. I promise. I became free from this distorted practice only by ending my ban on bad foods. My new way of relating to food allowed me to satisfy a much deeper, intrinsic need that was motivated by the desire for true pleasure. This led to the creation of a self-care practice where I get immense enjoyment from eating all types of foods in moderate amounts and moving my body for enjoyment as well as fitness. Moderation in all things, including excess. Excess on occasion is exhilarating. It prevents moderation from acquiring the deadening effect of a habit. W. Somerset Maugham. The phrase I coined to help me maintain balance in my life is moderation in all things, including excess. I sometimes eat beyond physical fullness because my taste buds delight in the flavors of my meal. And upon occasion, I may drink a bit more than my body wants. When I'm on vacation in the Sierra Nevada mountains, I tend to push my physical limits because I'm thrilled to be out in nature, and my soul gets fed by climbing granite mountains. From time to time, I watch TV in excess because I'm sick or want to zone out, but in general, I live in moderation. The beauty is this: moderation comes easily because I have given myself permission to have and do what I desire, and because I don't consider myself bad when I indulge in excess every so often. When we restore some sensibility to the pursuit of health, as Sobel and Ornstein suggest, we honor the gray areas of life. We move away from good/bad, right versus wrong, all or nothing thinking, and focus on the things that make us feel great in our bodies. By employing a more flexible mindset, we can live in moderation and achieve our best health possible. Health at every size. Science to support the Be Body Positive model. Health at every size maintains that people can follow a healthy lifestyle, have good metabolic fitness, good overall life quality, and reduce risk of disease no matter what their size. Glenn Gasser, PhD, author of Big Fat Lies, The Truth About Your Weight and Your Health. Health at every size, HAES, is a health-centered paradigm that is being adopted by a growing number of medical and mental health care professionals for use with their patients and clients. And activists and laypeople have joined forces to shift the current weight-centered paradigm, an approach to health that is causing harm to people of all sizes, to one that honors genetic diversity and promotes healthy lifestyles for everyone. Not only does HAES place importance on how we view weight as it relates to health, it also addresses the social justice issues that accompany weight-based discrimination. HAES practitioners worldwide are working with individuals in medical and mental health settings, conducting education and activism efforts to transform people's views about fat, and fighting for human rights legislation at the policy level. Many professional organizations currently work to advance the principles of HAES, including the Association for Size Diversity and Health and the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. HAES research shows balanced self-care behaviors trump dieting in health improvement. A number of studies that go back more than 50 years suggest that weight fluctuation or weight variation, gaining, losing over and over again, increases risk of cardiovascular disease by much more than just having a heavy weight itself. So, whenever you read a study that says obesity leads to cardiovascular disease, we have to ask ourselves, is it the obesity that is causing disease, or the fact that people are trying to become not obese? Glenn Gasser, PhD, author of Big Fat Lies, The Truth About Your Weight and Your Health. In 2005, Linda Bacon, PhD, and Judith Stern, RD, published their findings from a two-year study conducted at the University of California, Davis, in which they examined the health improvements of a HAES treatment versus a traditional dieting treatment in a group of women classified as obese by BMI standards. The results showed that significant health improvements occurred for the women in the study, who were able to recognize and follow internal hunger and satiety cues, exercised moderately on a regular basis, and received support to feel better about their size and shape, regardless of whether or not they lost weight. Dr. Bacon's powerful research study revealed that the overall health of the participants, measured by cholesterol, blood pressure, physical activity, and self-esteem levels, was not only improved, but also maintained by the HAES treatment. While the dieting group may have experienced short-term weight loss and health enhancements, no sustainable improvements were achieved. Not only did all of the dieters' health indicators return to their initial measurements, their self-esteem levels were even lower than they had been at the beginning of the study. The dieting group also had a difficult time staying with the program, shown by the high dropout rate. This finding is noteworthy in that it reflects a similar dropout pattern of people who pay diet programs or join gyms to help them lose weight. When the focus of a program is on weight loss, there is a much greater chance of failure, right from the start. Addressing skepticism. After teaching people about health at every size, certain questions often arise. What about morbid obesity? Isn't obesity linked to diabetes and heart disease? Aren't we in the middle of an obesity crisis in the United States? Dr. Bacon's analysis of the obesity research indicates that we must be thoughtful about distinguishing between association and causality when linking body size with morbidity. Most studies fail to consider the role of fitness, activity, nutrient intake, weight cycling, or socioeconomic status when considering connections between weight and disease. All of these factors, however, contribute to health risk. Many so-called weight-related issues can be treated effectively with little to no weight loss, and solely through positive shifts in eating and exercise behaviors. Individuals vary in how their weight responds to these changes. For example, type 2 diabetics can normalize their blood glucose by adopting healthy eating and exercise habits, even if they are classified as obese and don't lose a pound. If maintaining weight loss through dieting is not possible for the vast majority of the population, prescribing a restrictive diet to a fat person is counterproductive, as it tends to lead to poorer physical and mental health and increased weight over time. The Body Positive's view is that the United States is experiencing a health crisis, and that the emphasis on obesity as the problem mistakenly places the focus on body size instead of improving and maintaining healthy behaviors. We are concerned that too many people of all sizes do not have access to and/or can't afford nutritious foods, especially fruits and vegetables, which tend to be expensive. Regularly eat highly processed foods and get little exercise. A poor diet and a sedentary lifestyle cause some, but not all, people to put on weight, and this type of lifestyle is unhealthy for anyone. Develop imbalanced self-care behaviors in their pursuit of health and thinness, often because they have been told by someone else to lose weight, putting themselves at risk for life-threatening eating and exercise problems. We strongly believe that shame and blame do nothing to improve a person's health, a belief that is backed by research on weight stigma. We support people of all sizes by offering them our competencies. Taking weight out of the health equation is a first step. If you find yourself having resistance to the information you heard about Hayes, please try to keep an open mind and remember that current approaches to weight and health in this country have not been successful in making our population thinner or healthier in the long term. The quick fixes promised by weight loss programs, TV shows, pharmaceutical companies, and bariatric surgeons result in keeping people stuck in the nightmare of losing weight and gaining it back, over and over again. Note that the information about Hayes offered in this book is merely an overview of a broad topic. If you want to learn more about the science behind Hayes, I strongly recommend reading Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight by Linda Bacon, PhD. A list of other excellent books and websites that explore a weight-neutral approach to health can be found at thebodypositive.org. Lily Stokely, Body Positive Leader, student of Naturopathic Medicine, Bastyr University. Today, I held a human heart in my hands. A 102-year-old woman who died of old age donated her body to my naturopathic medical school for study. I held her heart that beat approximately 72 times per minute, 103,680 times a day for 102 years. You know what surrounded her heart and fed it so generously for each and every beat? Fat! The heart's preferred fuel is fat. The layer of fat not only cushioned her heart, but fed it as well. I was speechless as I stood there with the beautiful pink organ in my hands. Tears welled up in my eyes, and I was overtaken with complete and utter appreciation for the miracle of our bodies. I couldn't help but think of all the times I had hated my own fat, wanting it gone. After years of work to overcome body hatred, I now love my body, fat and all. Today, looking at that heart so perfectly created, my appreciation for fat was taken to a completely new level of awe and gratitude. As I examined the rest of the body, I continued to find special design miracles and their uses for fat, cushioning tendons and ligaments, a protective layer beneath the skin, in the bloodstream carrying vital nutrients, on our bellies shielding the organs that give us our life force, on our faces to make our distinct features. Fat is an essential element of our bodies that we can't live without. I came home tonight and looked in the mirror. I saw my round, beautiful belly, my healthy cheeks and glowing face, my unique smile, my strong, cushioned thighs, and my happily beating heart. I told my fat I loved it, from the deepest place of honesty I have ever experienced towards my own body. I want to live to 102 or beyond. I want to be healthy, happy, and have a heart that beats with love and vigor until the very last beat possible. What is a healthy weight? Health isn't delivered by a medical care system. It doesn't come in neat little packets or pills. It comes from living well, inside ourselves, with others, with work. Robert Ornstein, PhD, David Sobel, MD, Healthy Pleasures. If BMI is not a good indicator of healthy weight, what is? At The Body Positive, we believe that healthy weight is achieved by creating a balanced relationship with food, exercise, and rest. This means that most of the time, we eat when we're hungry, stop when we're full, and eat a wide variety of foods. We stay physically active on a regular basis, even at a moderate level, and rest when we're tired or ill. When we care for our bodies in this way, our weight will stabilize in a range that has been determined by our DNA, our heredity. This is what is known as set point, or natural weight. Exercise physiologist Glenn Gasser, PhD, describes natural weight in his book, Big Fat Lies, as follows. Each of us has a natural weight, which we will not find on any height weight chart. Those who are naturally meant to be heavier than culturally or medically imposed standards are healthier when they are heavier. Those who are naturally meant to be thinner than those standards are better off thinner. And those whom nature intended to be about average weight are better off at about average weight. We can attempt to drive our weight below its healthy, genetically determined set point range through restrictive dieting and/or compulsive exercising. However, to maintain that lower weight requires an endless battle and may result in disordered, sometimes fatal, eating or exercise behaviors. We can also drive our weight above its set point by consistently overeating and/or under-exercising. These are both circumstances that may require help from a health professional to bring us to a place of balance. When you develop an intuitive relationship with food and exercise, you may lose or gain weight to get back to your easily maintainable range. In the process, it is vital to shift your focus from the number on a scale to the task of caring for your body. With attuned listening to your physical needs for a variety of foods, movement, and rest, numerical measurements are no longer a concern. You maintain a steady size, which will shift slightly depending on factors such as the seasons, menstrual cycles, and travel, illness, or stressful events that may cause you to get away from your regular self-care routines. For the most part, however, you will remain within your individualized set point range. Restrictive diets and the weight gain that follows wreak havoc on metabolism and natural weight. Dr. Gasser explains the failure of restrictive dieting and the body's desire for stability. Failure, of course, is a purely societal label. For the human body, the post-diet weight gain constitutes a success. Success at defending what we call a set point weight. Dieting then is an attempt to defy the set point. Viewed in this manner, dieting is a thoroughly unnatural behavior. When a person's weight falls well below the set point, the body makes certain adjustments to thwart further assaults on its preferred weight. Ultimately, as the dismal data on dieting failures make clear, the body's set point is the winner in that battle. It is important to remember that living in balance means we sometimes get out of balance, and that's okay. With forgiveness and careful listening, we are able to return without extreme effort. If, for the most part, we care for ourselves gladly, our bodies will stay in their set point range for long periods of time. This range changes over time for both women and men, however, as we experience hormone and other physical shifts during different developmental phases of our lives. These adjustments happen naturally and are not reason for concern, unless they are extreme in either direction. Take a moment to consider any obstacles that may be keeping you from living in your natural weight range. How can you begin to remove them? Embrace the size and shape handed down to you by your ancestors, and live more healthfully and joyfully in your body. If you discover obstacles that feel overwhelming to tackle, please seek help from a weight-neutral therapist or health practitioner. The goal is to do your best to love and care for your body, while also taking into account the complexity of your human life. Elizabeth, love and acceptance. Self-care is the aspect of our health we can control. I am especially interested in what motivates improved self-care